each person is willing to die for their opinion about something, and the same experience, but with so many different interpretations, I feel there's some living similitude there, in, this, in a sense, in a number of different... I wrote this, I should say, as by way of preliminary, to really tear her apart. And
she knows that.
And
oh, you could see that. Some people don't see that. I don't know why.
But I was a little afraid that he would think I was too shrill because I expect him to be shrill.
But ultimately, particularly the women I've read it to have associated with her very, and have lost sight of Mala completely, who's supposedly the center of all this, and thought of us as an example of man's inhumanity to women, and how the trials and tribulations of living with a genius, you know, that kind of thing, and yet she chose geniuses quite willingly.
Yes.
Uh-huh. There was a recently a thing at the here at the
I think let's go.
Okay, a moment.
I think
now.
What I'll do is at the end of Act One, maybe I'll stop just long enough for everyone to stand up and, you know, just change position, and then we'll sit down again and I'll begin Act Two.
Like an intermission.
Yes, like a intermission.
May I say something before we start?
Daniel.
Thank you. As resident cook and creative pimp for this whole organization, I'd just like to say that everyone who is here tonight, and I presume that includes you because you came with Beatrice, is family in some specific sense. And Gregor Robinson is a marvelous painter whose stuff is on the walls here, this being one. And she's had a great influence on Gordon Stokes' art. Gordon's art is around the wall. And she is probably the dearest friend we have. She's also a very brilliant woman. Jacques Patineau is a new friend through other friends who is house-sitting my writing partner's place of business there, and who is a young Canadian with an amazing amount of culture, and I wanted him to be here tonight because I think that his input will be not like ours. I think it's an entirely different thing. You know Martin and Rhonda Chervin, you know myself, but Jacques and Anne, I would like to say that I have seen Beatrice Manley create an absolutely stunning catalog of characters ranging from Clytemnestra in Aeschylus's Oristia to, well, we are not children, Beatrice.
I'm not, you are.
Oh, thank you, I appreciate that. To Alma in Summer and Smoke, Tennessee Williams' play, to Hedda Gabler by Henrik Ibsen, to just a stunning performance in Suddenly Last Summer, again by Tennessee Williams, in the role which Katharine Hepburn failed to match the performance of Beatrice Manley, and really I thought was distressing in comparison. But loving Martin's play, Jacques, I thought to myself, who do I know, who I love, who I would want to share this with? And immediately Beatrice came to mind. And through many geographical samenesses of circumstance, we have found ourselves in the same stores, health food, and pub market. And every time I've seen her, I've looked into her eyes, and I have seen something so wonderful there that in everything that my partner Tony and I write, we always see Beatrice Manley as a character. And Beatrice, did I tell you about Doubleday? The senior West Coast editor of Doubleday, who has to pass anything that is originated out here, 2 weeks ago said he would do everything he could to see that Okinawa, which is, that's you as the general's wife, he would do everything he could to see that Doubleday did put a contract out on that, and I hope that they do. So, Beatrice is very much a part of Tony and Mai's creative life, and Tony, too, has seen almost, I believe, everything you've done in San Francisco. Since Martin is kind of a concept soulmate of mine, I'm just really happy to this evening have Beatrice and Martin and all of the members of the family who are available this evening here. All right, so a moment of silence while I knock back some vodka, and I'll be right in.
Can you come out here? Would you please get me a Kleenex?
Yes. No. Yes.
Alma Mahler, an original play by Martin Chervin, music by Gustav Mahler. First act, a bare stage, the scrim decorated with a giant, super life-sized poster of Gustav Mahler, a lectern, a water pitcher and glass. Eighth symphony, opening of the second movement. Alma enters, stops short at sight of the poster which she has not expected. Didn't you say my time will come? Well, it came, it's here. Bravo, bravissimo, Gustav. Who ordered this? Is it possible? Such bad taste. Can somebody get this illusion covered up, removed? Lost like your music. Lost and searching. Suddenly a glimmer of light. Then consciousness in space. Yes, Gustav? The music ends abruptly. Anna confronts her audience, nodding here and there, waving to a friend. She is well along in years, vintage years, erect and well preserved. She affects her self-image with a velveteen coat, an artistic flare of a scarf and a wide-brimmed hat. I should introduce myself. Should I say Alma Schindler? My father's name? He was an important Austrian painter, but who would come to a lecture by Alma Schindler? So, here I am, Alma Mahler, his wife, my husband. Yet the dead are so jealous of their prerogatives. Do they remember that once they had also been alive, that I should now add Alma Mahler Werfel, he too? Also, I was the wife of Franz Werfel, the great novelist, Song of Bernadette, you must know him. And should I leave out poor Walter? Walter was Gropius, another genius, the great architect of the Bauhaus school. I bore his child, my daughter Manon. It might have been Alma Mahler Gropius Werfel. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, except for a poem. But that's another story. She places a European-style briefcase on the left turn. It's Mahler you came to hear about. I am looking for a very, very important letter written in his own hand, even the smudge of ink with his fingerprint on it. So much of him is in it. Well, it will find itself. Meanwhile, about myself a little, eh? Gustav Mahler's widow. You ask, what? Is she still alive? I watched your faces from behind the curtain when you came in. Will they wheel her on in ice? Very well, I'll confess. I am only an actress playing myself. Who could resist such a role? La grande femme fatale. Be patient, please. I promise you more Mahler than Schindler. The letter and more of his music. She gestures with both hands into the wings, and the music of the opening theme continues from where it ended before. I promise you everything you came for, even more. Names. You want names? I'll give you testimonials. All those famous people in my life. Oskar Kokoschka, who worshipped me. Painters especially went wild over me. Gustav Klimt, famous as he was, adored by women, followed me to Venice, catching up to me in the Piazza San Marco, pleading, come, come to my studio. You know the greatest modern opera, Boitzek? Alban Berg dedicated it to me. In his eyes, I was Lulu, Lilith, fatal temptress who brings desire to madness, crushing men under the weight of their fantasies. I'll give you names. Schoenberg, Hauptmann, Richard Strauss, Hans Pfitzner, Gavrilovich, and a young, adoring disciple of Mahler's, Bruno Walter. You save up names when you outdistance the lives of your contemporaries. many more. But why I go on, hmm? In my life, only two names really mattered. The first who saw the rose open, and the last who took the key away with him. Let's leave it at that. I believe now we have said hello and guten Tag to one another. You know me for myself a little better. Now when we talk about Mahler, you will know who's talking. First, if you please, one point of order. There will be no answer and question, period, and for good reason. Shameless, what some people want to know, and where they poke their noses, sniffing. And that's less than the half of it. Now, we go back all the way to the year one of the 20th century when Mahler's planet just entered my zodiac. Listen a while. The music, fresh and sprightly, folk themish, not yet burdened with Weltschmerz. Mahler's time. I wish I could say it as simply as trying on a new dress in a room full of mirrors. Celebrate it with me. The new century was opening up the great city of Vienna, and I tumbled into it right fresh from the egg. I was impossibly young and romantic and unbelievably without experience. How beautiful was Bohemia. My feet were never still. I was in love 1,000 times. With art, I only flirted. My heart was given over to music. I began composing my own songs. The night before, I had been in the camp of the Wagnerites holding forth against Brahms, stubborn causes without compromises, tired but exhilarated. The doorbell rings, a calling card is presented, music ends, Herr Director Gustav Mahler, Wiener Staatsopera. Calling on me. I see him. There he is, coming down the hallways. His piercing eyes, like balls of black fire, accustomed to command, to be obeyed. What if they demanded? Could I resist? Instead, his head bows abruptly. He smiles, surprisingly, his sharp. Even timid, the corners of his lips turn up. Guten Tag, Herr Mahler. Didn't the maid take your coat? Very well, as you wish. Gustav. I agree, it is too strange. When you were so immediately familiar with me at the Zucker Candles, I said to myself, isn't he a condescending one? But now that you speak of it, it was, as you say, natural, spontaneous. It could have been the recognition of a previous lifetime together. No, I am not superstitious. Yes, I believe in fate and the stars and the hidden face of destiny. By the way, was it me you came to visit? In this lifetime, I mean. Mm. Oh, indeed, you flatter me. Vielen Dank, Herr Gustav. I bow to your compliment, but falsely. I hear it is not truly meant for me. I am Alma Schindler, not Gretchen at the spinning wheel, and certainly not the plodding, faithful, and much-abused Hausfrau, the soul of pots and pans. I am a musician like yourself. I compose my own songs. Who do you think I am? Gretchen. You are teasing me, not Gretchen. Don't you think I have read Goethe's Faust? And every German schoolgirl weeps for Gretchen, modest and virtuous, unspoiled, as Faust orders Mephistopheles to bring her to bed. No, no, let me continue. That's not what I am trying to prove. Gretchen is betrayed. She dies in shame,
but reaches salvation, interceding with her prayers to save the soul of Faust. Gustav, how can you see me as Gretchen? You do Faust a great injustice, sending him to me for redemption. Emancipation is my theme, not what you think I am with a struggling to be, the spirit of my own sex. Emancipation, you smile, Herr Mahler. Your tolerance pains me, Herr Mahler. It's deeper than you think. Someday a woman, it could be me, will conduct the Vienna Philharmonic. What would you say to that? No, I don't think you would exchange me for a one-life, one-love, simple village maiden, featherbed and all, goose on Sunday. Of course, I would be faithful if a man stood taller by a head above other men. You know what I mean? But you are not sensitive about your height. Genius is what I meant, of course. To such a man, I would be devoted. Two souls with one fingerprint. However, yes, however, if another one came along even greater than him. Why are you looking so smug and smiling, Herr Mahler? Your modesty overwhelms me. Will you look at my songs, Gustav? I suppose I should ask myself what this audience would like to hear. Should I tell them that he snored about the one boiled egg every morning for minutes? Expect anything. If you can look at me and see the young lovely girl under the wrinkles, oh, there, all right. And I want to get away from them the long way back down the long tunnel of time. Except that my lover has become a monument. What whim or fancy is there in a solid block of polished marble? How do I get past to the day I whispered yes too eagerly, too soon? She begins to dance. There is a certain inevitability to a summer's night. We danced. Gustav, why do you call me by your mother's name? A sign of love, you call it that. You, Herr Director, Stock's Opera, Vienna, it begins. She moves in a slow, dreamy waltz. It repeats itself. The same haunting dream that began another lifetime. My slave, my lover, son, father, Faust. Gustav, I will bear your child. There is no way back anymore. Mahler was mine. But wait. Before you start envying me, wait. Take a look at my inheritance. Mahler the conductor, that demon of the magic baton, why, he belonged to his first violinist as much as he did to me. More, in fact, and spent more uninterrupted hours together. Mahler the composer. Forget him as a man. This was a piece of furniture surrounded by quiet, occasionally needing to be fed. In the theater, where he was at his best, interpretive, creative, a whirlwind of passion, if you could afford the price of any seat, he was yours, your servant and your slave. To you, his audience, he gave away the best of himself, unstintingly. So, after we have divided all the portions, what is left behind? What scraps for Mahler's wife? A tired body aging fast, too weary and exhausted to rebel against the what shall I call it, a dictatorship of the spirit, the world seen as notes and instruments. Beyond mentioning, I won't even go into all the small tantrums, the pettinesses and self-overindulgences that are justified at home after the strain of public image, if you know what I mean. Ah, yes. If it were only as simple as only another woman, take him. Listen to me. I know something about these geniuses who call themselves vegetarians, then proceed to feed on the flesh of the ones nearest and dearest to them. I know. I have lived among leviathans when changes of tide have left them marooned in the harbour, how fast they rot and stink. In the morning he didn't just wake up, he was resurrected. No trace of the night. Wait, maybe in his music. But now awake, a proper man of authority, making me wonder. Do all the great men of this world have their wings clipped at night? I am not Gretchen. It was at your insistence that I sacrificed my songs. I am withered like the fig tree cursed by Jesus. All those dead leaves swirling in the wind, trying to climb back on their branches. Where are my songs? It took me all those years, that whole distance up to the 8th symphony, and even now it still astonishes me. I remember the early days of the 8th clearly enough, the way his eyes shone and couldn't keep his secrets. Once in a while he would remember that I was there in the room with him. He would look up at me happily, smile, and then forget me.
Yeah.
Forget me? Not exactly. Faust had sprouted Gretchen. From what other source? The intensities, the concentration of spirit, those mystic sentiments translated into music. Mahler, the Jewish convert to Catholicism. There are still those who smile knowingly as if to say, would a Jew have been given the baton in Vienna otherwise? Some truth, yes. They recognize opportunism. The ones who say this, perhaps because it is so familiar to most lives. But they don't know Mahler, neither him nor his music, if you can separate the two. Let them ask Alma Mahler, awake in the night beside him at a time when the tides of grief don't lie, and a pure soul can remind God of his promises. Finally, the day came with a blast of trumpets. Gustav presented me with a large packet. This is your symphony, announced, with tears in his eyes. I knew it was his 8th, the Faust and Gretchen symphony, and I trembled. I was only a small boat. This was a great ocean. The Kindertotenlieder music begins. Alma looks at the poster. You up there, is the making of music all that matters? Out of size, out of reach, you hang there, looking off to your own distances, serene, above it all, a genial Buddha separated from the mulling, toiling specks of life below. Are you some ambassador from the spirit kingdom, invulnerable to your own wounds, that you can sit there mimicking a father's tears over his dead children? And meanwhile, our own baby, your Marie, is playing by your feet. You are not that removed, Gustav. I am her mother, and I worry about tempting fate this way. I am listening. I hear what you have to say, and I am not being overwrought, hysterical, all those names you call me. It is only poetry, I know that. But before the poems, these were Rilke's own children. Their death was real, real, real. That's why he wrote the poems. And for you to appropriate his feelings, that's dishonest. Crossing boundaries, lying next to a corpse to know the feeling of death. There is a plague on it. It spreads. If you don't believe in such boundaries, Gustav, what about plain and simple good taste? Rilke's children didn't die just to give you an excuse for a song cycle. She becomes more agitated, spilling over. No, no, Gustav, it must not be. You must stop, Gustav. Stop playing. The music stops abruptly. Never. The death of children must never become so artful. Don't you see how it goes beyond blasphemy? Cursing the lips that spoke it. What happens when you look at the door, imagining the entrance of death? It arrives. Then now look at little Marie, all upset. You see how she trembles at our loud voice. No, 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 we're not shouting at you. We love you. You have done nothing wrong. There, go to your papa, who will read out of your nice new big red book of fairy tales. Nice fairy tales with great colored pictures, not about T-A-T-H. Are you remembering Marie when she was born, Gustav? How terrible it was when the fever came, turning her face red, and she kept waving her tiny hands up and down, growing weak with the effort to breathe. You were a giant in those days, like God blowing into the clay. I saw how you picked her up in your arms. I saw you open her purple lips with your finger, then blowing, breathing for her with your own lungs. I saw you grow wild when Mary grew convulsive, lifting her high above your head with both hands to show God what he was doing. I can still hear the terrible agony in your voice. Marianne, Marianne, it's Papa. She hears you. Her eyelids began fluttering like a bird testing its wings. You see, Gustav, life also imitates art. Isn't that what we have been trying to say to each other? Isn't it? Isn't that where pity begins and God descends? Kinder Totenlieder resumes. But there was no pity. No pity. Mary died. Mary is dead. He's dust. When the time came, for tears, your eyes had been emptied for Rilke's child, only dry wells for Mary. Gone away, come out of the night is dark, and you are lost. What is the child doing?
I still have not emptied my tears.
The letter. Berlin, November 12, 1910. What more needs to be said? Gustav became insane with grief, of no help to me or to himself. With one hand I lowered that small, beloved, much cried over body into the grave. The other hand restrained Gustav, keeping him out of it. Marianne, 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 shrill and to the end of his breath. He had lost the power to do miracles. And I, my dreams that God was also made of clay. Mahler had been agonizing over his Sixth Symphony, and now he was off to Berlin, laying bare his innermost forebodings before what he called an audience of sophisticates ashamed to fear, purgatorio. I was feeling anxious about it when his letter arrived. Sixth Symphony, please. My dearest Aumsche, Raumsche, Raume Lili Lili Lili, Raumsche. Puppy does play with my name like a cat with a ball. The orchestra willing, the performance went most splendidly. I sustained the pause between movements as long as I dared, not even realizing until I caught myself how much I needed to know the pulse of this audience. The only clue was the absence of whispers and the deep breathing as from a giant monster. The usual coughs and clearing of throats, especially during the slow movement, but more restrained, as during a funeral service, when each mourner mourns.